Frank. Yeah, you can come here. In this front row. Going to work, he's trying to work them to come. So give us a few minutes, please accept our apologies. But you can have those sandwiches and tempt me because I'm fasting. But tempt me and I will show you my willpower. I will not be tempted. I will not be tempted. For long. Langa? Now that I announced we've got a call and you're walking out, now we don't have a call. Hey, it is a tactic of the ANC, eh? Stall the process. I think we, now that we are properly constituted, I want to suggest that we start off with the post bank bills, and we're very happy that the chairperson of the board is here, Wiyo Mkhlati, and I'm going to invite her to introduce the team and just take us through the broad sort of outline of the bill and the process. Where is the bill at the current stage, and when is it likely to come to Parliament? So, over to you, Chairperson. Press the button on the panel.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and greetings to all Honourable Members of Parliament. We are here from the post office, South African Post Office, as three representatives, myself as the chair of the board, Ntombi Msimang as a member of the board as well, who's also chairing the Post Bank Committee, and we've got the managing director of the Post Bank with us, who's going to take us through. But I'd like to first apologize for our group CEO, who could not make the meeting today, as you might realize that we having a strike, so she's having to manage things back home. However, I just need, before the MD of Post Bank takes over, to highlight that the South African Post Office as a company of with the DOC as a shareholder is, in terms of the deal, represented by the Department of Communication that takes responsibility for the processes. We, however, have structures that we have collaborated with the department and other departments, which Dr. Nemela Kambule, who is the MD, will be talking to. So at this point, we would use the opportunity today just to highlight the specific issues relating to the process of the corporatization, because primarily the bill talks to the corporatization of the Post Bank. And from our side, the focus is going to be on the process of the corporatization of the Post Bank, because we might not be able to handle the questions relating to the specifics of the bill, because we are not responsible primarily for the bill. Thank you. I'm going to hand over to Ms. Nemela.
Honorable members, honorable chair, because, again, the chairperson did say that in terms of the bill, we can't talk to it since it's the responsibility of the department. I'll just highlight at a high level where Post Bank comes from and what set the basis for us to start this process for post-bank corporatization, which is basically the memorandum of understanding that was signed in 2004 and 2005 by the Minister of Communications and the Minister of Finance, subsequent to the post office having had challenges and the Minister of Finance being concerned and wanting to make sure that the depositors' funds are protected. In terms of where the post bank comes from, it was established in October 1822 in the Cape Colony, and at the time its responsibility was to raise funds for telecommunications development. It was in 1894 when it was made part of the post office, but it was only in 1910 when it became the division of the post office. So for us, in terms of how we saw the journey, was that the journey would be from 1910 to 2010, where we can take the post bank to the next level in terms of making sure that we can enable the people that are unserved and underserved for them to access beyond just the savings that they currently do. In terms of our role currently, it's that we are not, in terms of the vision of the post bank, it was set out in the white paper that was done prior to the signing of the Memorandum of Understanding, and the vision is to offer simple and affordable banking products to ordinary people, and making sure that we enable broader communities to be able to save. And in so doing, for us to become a bank of choice for ordinary people. We're not an autonomous legal institution. We're part of the post office. Our activities are currently regulated by the Postal Service Act and the Post Office Savings Bank Regulations. That is within the Postal Services Act. We're not a registered bank. We have an exemption from the minister that enables us to do the business of a bank without a banking license. Despite not being a bank, we still regulated by the Financial Services Regulator. We need to make sure that we do what we have to do in terms of making sure that we get FICA documents for us to open accounts for customers. And even without us being regulated, we need to make sure that we comply in that regard. We're currently excluded from the payment association system, and as a result, currently we're sponsored by Standard Bank, who's the bank that post office actually banks with. So because we're not part of the payment system, it therefore means that in terms of the payment system, one would see a Standard Bank, even though we would have our own a box in terms of where our cards actually sit. The framework has been developed in terms of us becoming part of the payment system, and we currently sit in PASA as a member and as observing member, which is the Payment Association of South Africa, which is basically a system which is governed by banks, but we sit as a member so that we can begin to understand what roles and responsibilities we need to have going forward once we get our license. Our activities are limited to deposit taking, again, because we don't have a banking license, but we do also have a third-party arrangements in terms of enabling our customers to be able to receive other products without them being provided by us directly. In terms of the government's vision, as set out in the white paper that was done prior to the Memorandum of Understanding that was signed, was for the bank to establish a financial institution for mass mobilization of savings and investments from the broad community, to be a bank of choice for the unbanked and underserved segments of our communities, to contribute to household savings, and for us to impact on the stability and growth of the national economy by, again, ensuring that we inculcate a culture of savings amongst our communities. In terms of the corporatization process, in terms of how it was set out in the white paper, it's said to be the art of organizing the structure of a government-owned entity or part thereof into a legal entity as a corporate structure found in corporate trade companies. The companies would have directors and management and shareholders, And the main goal of corporatization in this respect is allowing government to retain ownership of the company whilst enabling it to be able to provide the requirements of the segment that we're supposed to be serving. In at the time after the post office had separated from Telkom, the post office went through a number of challenges at the time, and what happened is that the post office then started using depositors' funds because of challenges that it faced at the time. And the condition that was made by the Minister of Finance for them to pay back the funds that had been used by the post office was that there was supposed to be a corporatization process to make sure that we safeguard the depositors' funds, but also to ensure that even in terms of delivery, in terms of the products that we deliver for the customers, we actually broaden that. Hence, we then started getting involved with the Mzansi product and ensuring that we deliver card services and third-party payments for customers. And when the memorandum of understanding was signed, which was based on the white paper that that had been developed prior, it was signed in 2004, 2005 by the Minister of Finance first in 2004 in April and the Minister of Communications subsequently in 2005. There at the time, there were three broad phases that were defined in terms of what the journey of the Post Bank was supposed to be. And in terms of the journey, the first part was to ensure that the bank had diversified products beyond just the book savings account. Hence, we then established also card products and also investment products. And that we needed to make sure that we firewall all the depositors' funds and on a daily basis would know what money came from the depositors and what was it that belonged to the post office. Over and above that was to make sure that the post bank also became efficient and firewalled or everything else that was that belongs to Postbank. The second phase was supposed to be for the Postbank to become a subsidiary of the Post Office and ensure that it over time it then which would be the third phase it become a fully a fledged bank extending services lending services. The key focus is therefore for the bank to become a second-tier national bank, serve its customers, and manage the financial regulatory environment in terms of ensuring that the banking system continues to be protected and for us to avoid systemic risks by sitting outside the banking system whilst we take deposits and to protect the depositors' funds and to enable the post office to diversify because currently the bulk of the contribution in terms of the post office comes from the mail business, which contributes currently over 62% of the post office revenue. Post Bank currently contributes only 24%, and with the courier and freight business contributing 23% overall to the revenue of the post office. A number of years ago, the post office then looked at how it needs to be structured and what sort of areas it needed to focus on. And during that period, we then re-looked at what are the areas of focus for the Post Bank emanating from the Memorandum of Understanding that had been signed. And that will the Memorandum of Understanding defined the business of Post Bank to include the money transfers, which is both local money transfer and international money transfer, payments, which would be government payments for people to be for communities to be able to pay, for example, local municipality bills and any other bill that is a government bill, depending on what contracts the post office would have with different institutions. Payments, for example, you find instances where customers may not be able to reach a particular institution. For example, if it's an insurance company, they can come and pay for their insurance policies using the post office infrastructure. And also to provide the savings, which is originally what the post office did, which is the book savings, but also for us to enable customers to do transmission accounts and investments. The investments are more simple investments that we currently do that would be like fixed deposits. You would have a one-month fixed deposit, 3 months, with them extending to up to 4 years. So the products that would sit under Postbank that would be corporatized would basically be those products that were defined in the Memorandum of Understanding. So the three phases I referred to, that the key area was to ensure that the first part was for us to sit in our own right and be profitable as an institution. And over time, we have diversified the products and we continue to mobilize savings. In terms of the composition of the deposit book currently, where we sit in terms of where we came from, we currently have $3.3 billion in terms of the total book that we had as at the end of April. And this, in terms of where we were when we started the process, in terms of the different phases, the bank had only $1 billion in its book. And in terms of the composition of the deposit book, we currently have 19% being when we had it in at the end of the financial year, 19% actually came from of our deposits of the $3.2 billion was from our Mzansi customers, and 18% was our Flexi card, and 8% was from our investments. Our investments continue to be the smaller portion of the total book that we have, and we have the bulk being interestingly, which sits at 54%. Being our book-based account, which is an account that we've had over the years, and we continue to grow that account because ordinary communities feel comfortable in using a book to actually save, and the card, they only use it really to transact rather than for saving. So over the years, since 2006, the book has increased by over $1 billion, but prior to that, we used to have in the past a interesting situation where government allowed, in terms of tax, if you came and saved with the post office, government allowed individuals to save up to 100,000 without being taxed. But subsequently, from 1994, even if you do bank with the post office, you still get taxed, which was not the case in the past. In terms of the current arrangement, which was part of what set up by the Memorandum of Understanding, is that a Postbank, even though it's part of the institution, would actually pay for the services that we use the branches for. So there's internal, we call it wooden money because it's us paying each other, where we continue to pay per transaction so that we can make sure that we understand as to what exactly is it that a Postbank is actually generating. So over the past 6 years, there's been exciting improvement in terms of what has happened. On the agreement that was signed by the ministers, there were specific issues that needed to be addressed prior to the corporatization process. What had happened was that the post office had used up to $960 million of the depositors' funds, and a national treasury actually paid only $750 million, with the view being for the post office, for Postbank to be able to increase that investment to be able to get the amount to be where it's supposed to be. And the funds were set to sit, were dedicated to sit in CPD, which is the central corporation of public deposits, which is in the Reserve Bank, until such time that Postbank is actually corporatized. So those funds are not in public investment like we normally would invest our depositors' funds, sitting at the Reserve Bank until the process is completed. And then in terms of the management of the depositors' fund, currently, as I indicated earlier, what we do is we would get the deposits, which would come into the post office, and then it would go into the Postbank account so that we can, on a daily basis, understand as to what is it that belongs to depositors and what is it that is additional interest. And in terms of the structure, the process that was used for us to look at how do we actually get the bank to become registered, various structures were set up. We set up a steering committee, which was defined in the Memorandum of Understanding, and a steering committee and a working committee, which includes National Treasury, the Department of Communications, the Post Office, and the Department of Communications, to make sure that as we continue through the journey, there's a collective responsibility and ensuring that they enable the other structures to be able to assist us to get to the point where we're supposed to get to. I think a at a high level, the key areas that sit in the memorandum of understanding are those, but also to ensure that even in terms of policies that the board put in place, the alcohol policies, we sit on a monthly basis to look at what amounts actually have we collected as deposits, where are the funds being invested, and report on a quarterly basis to the board as to what is it that is being done with the funds. I think I'll leave it there at a high level, which is basically the focus of the memorandum of understanding, and we'll take questions.
Very much, Ms. Namela. I think at this point it's just to sort of highlight that the post, as indicated by the MD, the post bank currently operates under the Post Office Act, and hence the bills at this point, the two bills, the post bank bill as well as the post office bill. South African Post Office, because the issue is to sort of deal with both of them in terms of amendments. And it is basically that process that the Department of Communications is dealing with, and currently they've been involved in pre-consultation because they are in the early stages of the bill and at this point have not kind of come to a conclusion because they had just finalized this, I think, the consultation that they're busy with. So it is out of that process that they will finalize, and we're working with them at this point so that we can get the process to a stage where we are ready to come back to the portfolio committee in terms of a process that they will conclude from the side of DOC with our participation. But currently, we felt it was important that we present the direction of the post office to say, we see the corporatization process as a process that ensures that specifically the poorest of the poor have access to services, and the current status of the post office has demonstrated from a level of governance, profitability, and systems that it is ready to get to the process of full corporatization into a fully-fledged financial services. And we have also shown in terms of the Mzansi account that we are directly targeting the poorest because we have been the leaders as compared to the commercial banks in terms of the Mzansi account. I think we are over 40%, we take over 40% of the market share, and the next commercial bank that follows us is at 20-something. So basically, and the focus on the book that despite the cards, the smart cards that everybody is using, the post of this book continues to grow is also for us an indication that we are reaching the poorest of the poor. And the third-party experiments that we conducted from a lending perspective have also demonstrated to us that we can reach the poorest of the poor. And the linkage with the post office we view as significant because at this point, the post bank survives to a greater extent in terms of reaching the targeted areas because of the outreach and the footprint of the post office. We have rolled out over close to 6 million, 5.7 million addresses to rural areas. And the recent financial results were showing us over 5% of revenue, new revenue, was coming from these areas. But what we're realizing is that we need new products that are going to service the underserved areas. And it is not just savings that people need. They need more in terms of financial services, and we believe that the offering that the post bank can provide as a package, including the services they provide in terms of pension funds and other government services, will ensure that we can provide efficient and good service in terms of value to people with the improvements from our side that we're engaged in on an overall basis in terms of the post office. So that's basically, in a nutshell, Honourable Chairperson, what we can present at this point, and we'll take the cue from you.
Thank you very much for that overview of what is intended in this particular bill. Open for questions, comments. The panel there.
Do I understand it correctly? In fact, every post office will also be a bank. So they will be provide those banking facilities at every post office in South Africa.
I'm sorry about that. Yes, it is, even currently in terms of how we provide our services. In every post office, you can get your post bank for that.
Is the post office here in Parliament? You can go in, you could save it down there, in Zambia account, you can draw a few rands from there if you want to. It works. I went last week, I realized that my card had expired. There's a new card out. So they want my ID and my proof of residence. I said, all right, I'll get that to you. I didn't realize there's a new card out.
Actually, what's interesting is that even if you, it's the 2010 card that we the newly designed one, but even if you bank with another institution, actually, you can go to the post office and be able to draw, even because the post office is part of your banking system. So even if you bank with another bank and you're in Parliament and you need cash, you can go to the post office and get your cash using your Absa card or your Standard Bank card. You can, because it works. Our systems work exactly like other ATM system work. So you can go and draw even if you don't necessarily bank with us, but would encourage.
I didn't know that, but I keep running to the net bank down there.
All right.
And the charges are the same.
We feel as the post office that we get shortchanged by the commercial banks, because if you go, it's not us that benefit. It's more the bank, your bank, that would, the charges would go mostly to your bank, because we would get paid more like you've gone to an ATM, and it's human beings that are there, so it's not quite the ATM. But it's more your bank that would be taking the bulk of the charges and not necessarily us.
Expired.
Yes, a 2010 card that has just been launched. And what's exciting, actually, in terms of all the Visa cards that have been launched for 2010, ours, in terms of marketing, it's come up as the second best card in terms of design, with the first one being the FNB card. So in that regard, it's quite exciting for us.
I'm learning something today. Patricia?
I just want to understand the definition, or if you can define corporatization for me. And when you talk about corporatization, what comes to mind also is the ownership. Who owns the bank? And since we are reaching out to the deep rural areas, the poorest of the poor, will they have any shares in this? Because certainly they don't have access to a commercial bank, to have some ownership structure there. So corporatization, you know, I always know when we have the debate about privatization, is corporatization not just another word to hide privatization? So if you can just more elaborate on this corporatization.
I think corporatization, as a board member of the post office, it took us some time to also understand, to tell the truth. But it's really about governance, because the post office is a government entity. It has one shareholder, which is the department, which is the government, the Department of Communication. So it was important, I think, from the National Treasury point of view, to say, around the post bank, put in systems that are going to make sure that the governance issues are addressed as a ring-fenced product, to make sure that it is a banking, because we are looking after depositors' funds. So as we've been moving on, we have not really gotten the impression that it's being privatized. It is it is within the post office, and it has one shareholder. But the governance systems around post bank are definitely systems that look after people's funds.
The reason why I'm asking is also linked with Standard Bank, you mentioned earlier on. So the role of Standard Bank, which is a commercial bank, but also if it's owned by government, do you pay any dividends over to government? And if so, has this happened in the past?
I think it's important to indicate that currently the relationship with Standard Bank is more for Standard Bank to provide us support because we don't have a banking license yet. And the, in terms of the national payment system, we are not allowed as an institution if you don't have a banking license to be part of the payment system. By us actually going through this process, we then will be able to stand in our own right as an institution and become part of the payment system. So Standard Bank is more them sponsoring us by providing us the support and the vehicle for us to be part of the payment system. They have no relationship in terms of ownership per se. It's more of them providing us the support, which could have been by any other bank. And they are providing us the support because of the journey that we started. But in future, we will not necessarily have to rely on them. No. It's definitely not free. We pay for the services that they are providing the support for. But over and above that, the post office bank with Standard Bank. That's why I suppose it was easier as part of their client retention, if you may call it that, for them to provide that support. But it's not free because it's for us to be part of the banking system. But in terms of where we are, in terms of what was agreed by in the memorandum of understanding, is that the bank will be owned by the post office on behalf of government. So there was no indication of what else is possible in terms of ensuring that particularly the ordinary people that are the ones that actually bank with Post Bank. As to what should happen there, that was not defined in the memorandum of understanding.
I'll just deal with the dividend part. I think in terms of the dividends, we as a state enterprise, every year we have an AGM. We do not pay dividends, but every year when we have an AGM, there's an agenda item of payment of dividends. And every year we have an agreement with the minister in terms of how our profits are going to be reinvested in terms of the universal service obligation and specifically for social imperatives. So we do have a specific program that gets viewed by the Department of Communication in terms of how the profits are reinvested for the benefit of the people.
Suzanne Tebe, that's a new member. This is her maiden speech in this committee. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Fortunately, I'm among the people who use this post bank in the parliament. I've used it regularly and it really assists a lot. Lastly, I also covered, because I also wanted to check about your relationship with the Standard Bank. That's all the interest. Is it the interest in terms of other banks? How are your interests compared to other banks? Lastly, is the issue of the other services provided by other banks. So it's like a 32 days account. I know most of the banks have this. Do we have that kind of a service in our bank? And how, if it do we have, how are the interests compared to other banks? Then we can move from this, then we can come to post office. Thank you.
All these questions are self-interest questions. but maybe that's the best way to penetrate this thing, to understand what it means in practical terms.
In terms of the interest rates, let me just make an example with regards to our Mzansi customers. In most instances, if you are a Mzansi customer, you would not earn any interest with any other institution. You would not earn any interest on your whatever your deposit you have, because normally it's a transact card, therefore you're supposed to be using it to transact. But whilst the money is there, we actually do pay interest even for Mzansi customers, because for us, they're actually the most important customers because of the fact that they are the most needy in terms of services. And in terms of our interest rates, we continuously actually look at the market and say, what interests are being paid, and we pay, we always make sure that we pay better than everybody else. On the products that we have, like I said, we have simple products. We don't have complicated products. We don't have necessarily a 32-day account, which is a rolling account, but we have a fixed deposit account. We have a one-month fixed deposit, three-month fixed deposit, but the other account that is we have, which is a savings account, we have a contractual savings account where if you have, for example, a Mzansi account with us, you may decide that in your Mzansi account, there's 5,000 rand that go in there on a monthly basis, but you want to save 1,000 rand, then you can put a stop order where you can have a linked savings account where the funds go on a continuous basis. What we try and do is that we strive to be even more competitive on the products that are products for ordinary people. For example, on what we call our Mukozi account, which is a club account or stock sell account, we pay the best rates that you can find in the market, because for us, those are again our most important customers, because those are customers, even though research may argue that they're not sensitive to interest rates because they just want to have access. We think it's important for us, too, to make sure that we pay them the best rates, because everywhere else, your stock sales and your club accounts are seen as cheap funds, because in most cases they just want to be able to put their funds elsewhere. But because of our responsibility to those communities, those are the types of accounts that we make sure that we do better than what the market can actually offer, because those are the most important customers to us.
Thanks, Chair. Hopefully we'll get this presentation. Maybe it will assist us. First question. In your presentation, you talk of a taxation. You said before 1994, there was no taxation as long as there was no taxation. But are you thinking to go back to that situation where you say, or do you intend to propose that maybe at least to a certain level there will be no taxation and things like that? That's one. Two, the bank will have their own board of directors or board of directors. So they will report direct to the minister, or they will report to the post office, as you just said. The bank will be under the post office. So they will report direct to the post office, and the post office report to the minister, or they will report direct to the minister without reporting to the post office and things like that. I wanted to get that clarity. Thanks.
I think on the issue of taxation, I don't think we would have a right to define as to how the tax structure should be, and I think at the time the exciting thing was that at the time it was when all the investments that the deposits that would go into the post office would actually be invested for telecommunication infrastructure. It could be that the view is that there's other types of collections for government to be able to invest in all the other things that government may want to invest, hence it was actually taken away. We had not thought of proposing that that be the case, but I will take advice from the chairperson and from the board. It was interesting because at the time when this actually fell off. A lot of deposits were taken by individuals out of the post office, because at the time the post office had about 4 billion and the 3 billion was actually withdrawn because people thought, why keep my money in the post office if I don't have the benefit? Even though the benefit was up to 100,000, it was not like it was an open thing. If you invested up to 100,000 in the post office, you actually did not get taxed on that money, and we lost the bulk of it and had to start from scratch. Hence, between then and now, we've grown extensively. We've grown the book by 2 billion, but it's not anywhere close to where it was at the time. On the issue of the shareholder arrangement, I will just talk to more the expectations when an institution is a bank as to what is the responsibility of the Reserve Bank, the requirements from the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank would require that you have a separate board of directors, and those directors need to have what they define as fit and proper, because there's certain things that you have, processes you have to go through to be a director of a bank as defined by the governance structures that are set up by the Reserve Bank. And fit and proper relate to the experience that the individual has in terms of understanding how a bank should operate. But over and above that, there's always an argument in terms of the fit and proper assessment that if you can't take care of your money, you can't take care of other people's money. So those are some of the issues that the Reserve Bank would look at in approving members of the, because even though the shareholder will decide on who will be the members, the Reserve Bank would still have to vet those members to see as to whether the fit and proper test actually exists. And it's not only for board members, but it's also for executives that work in a bank. There's particular processes that you need to go through. In terms of the structural arrangements whether this board, and there's also other three key subcommittees that you require if you are a bank. You need to have a risk management committee. You need to have a committee that looks after the audit of the bank to make sure that the systems of the bank are run properly. But over and above that, you would have a committee that would be structured will compose only of directors and non-executive directors to ensure that other issues that as directors you want to engage on that may be about the executives, you can be able to independently discuss those issues and engage on those issues. So it would be the board, but these key other subcommittees are always key when you run a bank. In terms of the relationship between the post office board and the ministry in terms of how those reporting lines are going to be, I suppose will be defined clearly by this process of the bill in terms of how that is going to be. But ideally, again, the other issues when it's a bank that they look at is what they call independent directors. You also need to have directors that are not linked per se to the post office for them to exercise their independence when they make decisions, because decisions that are made in a bank always have to be to safeguard the institution, but also to safeguard the depositors' funds. But ultimately, as to how it should be structured, I don't think I can talk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, this is very interesting, the corporatization process. Can I just ask two questions? One is with regard to the current accounting processes that is currently followed. How is it done, Chairperson? I would like to know, is the Post Bank listed within the Public Finance Management Act as an entity? How do you account for current deposits, et cetera? And then secondly, if we could, with reference to the different committees that would have to be established if they change to become a real bank. The second issue that I just wanted to ask, if we look at the potential of the Post Bank and we look at the banking sector, which is currently certainly not producing the type of product for remote communities that they would feel comfortable with, or that they would not feel a little overawed with all the different products that are available. Just ordinary people who want to secure their money and who want to build up a little nest egg for their old age. The Post Bank certainly has a huge potential. Now, what would you regard as board members at present as the single most serious problem that is inhibiting the growth at this stage? Understandably, the changes in the Act are at present because Treasury demands that to ensure proper accounting. Would this process also take away some of the other hurdles that you may face to expand the book of the Fund Act? Or what are those? What do you have an idea? That once the bill, the process starts, Chairperson, it would be interesting to just understand that in the same effort that we look at the corporatization issue, we also look at other possible measures to ensure that this bank could really provide the services that the ordinary people in the remote areas really require, also as far as accessibility to real people and not machines are related. Thank you, Jim.
A question, incidentally.
I think in terms of currently, we don't have our separate financial reporting. Yeah, we that our financial sit inside the post office. So when you get the post office financials, there'd be key highlights on what are the things that the Post Bank has achieved in the past year. Going forward, once we become a subsidiary, it means we'll have our own separate financials. And in terms of PFMA, again, in terms of whether we'll register separately in terms of PFMA or it will be still under the post office, I think there are some of the issues that will be defined in the regulations once ultimately the structure is set up separately. The issue of the products, I think the board will also give guidance in terms of how they see things. But in terms of us as the executive, I think what we find as an opportunity is to be able, and actually as defined by the Strauss Commission, which was many years ago, that said the issue of consumption smoothing, particularly for our rural communities, continue to be a major challenge. You may find that you have a pensioner that comes to get their pension on a monthly basis using the post office infrastructure. But again, because we don't give loans, even if they may need, and you know that their pension is going to come through your system, even if they may need in January additional 1,000 rands to be able to pay school fees, currently we are constrained, we are not able to assist them because we are not allowed to do lending because we are only a deposit-taking institution. And there's also another opportunity that we believe actually does exist, in terms of being able to provide our communities with basic insurance, both long-term and short-term, for our communities, which we currently can't do. Currently, the post office does have insurance products, but those insurance products that the post office has are only related to mail. We can't provide any other products, even though we do have other third-party arrangements where we've entered into partnership with people that, in the meantime, whilst we're not able to provide these services for our customers, can you please make sure that you assist through the post office so that by the time we're able to provide those products, then we can be able to provide them in our own right. But it is the opportunity. It's your insurance products, but also your basic lending facilities, and not big things like big home loans. We started a very interesting pilot last year where we were working with the National Housing Finance Corporation because they don't have a retail infrastructure. So they did a pilot where they started doing affordable housing using the post office infrastructure. We believe, and I think the board will indicate as to what their view is, but we believe as the executive that there's huge opportunities for us to work with current existing government institutions, both departments and other state-owned entities that already have funding. Because the other thing that we have as a country is that in most cases it's not so much that we're short of money, but the money doesn't get to people that it should get to. And we're looking at various, we're engaging various stakeholders to make sure that we can use the post office through the post bank to facilitate enabling access to products that already exist. There's also another a program that we started last year, for example, with the National, with the Department of Land Affairs, whereby they actually, where they pay people that have are not necessarily get their, in terms of land restitution. So those people in the past used to go and get cash checks And we started a program with the Department of Land Affairs last year whereby the money would come through to the post office. We would open bank accounts so that people, and people would be limited initially in terms of how much money you can take, even if in terms of whatever was paid out. For example, if it's 50,000, the initial cash that you would get is 50,000 for us to encourage people to actually invest this money, then take off this money and use it. So there's a number of programs that we've already started to say, how can we enable government to deliver using the infrastructure that currently exists, but also enable us as Postbank, because, for example, in terms of lending, we don't know anything about lending, for us to begin to learn so that by the time we get to a point where we can be able to do these things, we have some kind of experience in terms of what the approach is. I'll leave it to the board to answer.
So much. I think just to add on the accounting one, once we account through the post office, we do have periodic reviews by the Treasury in terms of specifically the post bank book and the Treasury investments. So basically that is one thing that gives comfort to us as a board, but also we operate as if we are licensed in terms of the way we to prepare ourselves, and the Reserve Bank as well has been part, of us, form part of the community, and has been part of assisting with some of these assessments for preparation. And as a board also, with executives, we went through courses on banking so that we can understand the process. But I think on the last one, Dutsi has dealt with most of them, but I would like to also use the opportunity to indicate that the advantage for the post office, post bank specifically, is to ensure that the problem of collateral that most banks require for people for lending is to some degree dealt with through the savings. We already have people with their history. So we can use the history of savings. I mean, some of these groups have saved for years, 30 years have been part of the group. So if the group wants to get, a loan, you use that history. You don't need to go to everybody's house and get everybody. There's a history of, and that you can leverage from a gearing perspective. But also to highlight that, this might give it, we do have an issue with FICA, the Financial Intelligence Act. I forgot the C. But basically, FICA insists that you must have an address to open an account. As a post office, we've assisted to open an account, but for women, it continues to be an issue because you have to have a letter, a bill. You should have paid telephone, you should have paid water, you should have paid for you to produce to a bank. In a majority of cases, you'd find that even in urban areas, even a woman like me, where the husband is the one who's paying the bills, even if I contribute to the house, when I have to go to the bank, I have to get a letter from him that I'm his wife and I live in this house and da da da. It goes further in a village where there's no, we saw when we were doing the SASOL scheme that people had to go back to the village, make sure that an uncle will talk to the chief for the chief to write a letter to say so-and-so resides here, for the letter to come back. So, we understand the significance of FICA in an environment like this with fraud and corruption. At the same time, we are having to look at mechanisms of assisting the majority of people who are disadvantaged by some of these laws.
Dovi and Patricia.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry for coming late. And I might be out of line. I don't know where you focus it, but I understand that you're talking about the post bank. I just want to know, now that the board has mentioned, the history of people who bank with them, Stockfels and people who are disadvantaged. I know people don't like to be called ordinary people. We better say people who are disadvantaged, and so many people, in South Africa who have confidence in Postbank. Does the Postbank have any projects they are assisting, you know, especially women in improving their lives as the post bank. Do they contribute to such? And I would like to ask one question, maybe that is personal, and join the other people who are asking personal questions about the location of the post offices. I always say when I ask this question, I stay in Soweto. Many people don't stay in Soweto any longer. So that is the reason why I know about this. You know, I stay in Jabavu, and I don't know which post office am I using. Is it Orlando? Is it Pimville? Is it Kwakuma? Is it, I don't know. How do they deal with this issue? The location of post offices, and how do they serve the community, the demarcation of the areas? Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm not convinced, and I can't really see the difference between a commercial bank and this bank. And since we are talking about the principles of the bill, I wanted to know whether we did look at other models. Why have we not considered the Bangladesh model of Yunus Muhammad, where it's a kind of bank that doesn't make the poor dependable? And you know, where they can really look after themselves. Because in one breath you are saying they will not be lending, then you say you will be lending with taking as collateral the savings of people. And I can't see the difference, except you're going to have a corporatized, semi-commercial bank owned by government, and you're going to have government having its own bank run on supposed to be different principles, and I can't really see the difference between the principles of a commercial bank and this bank. And, you know, it's just creating another bureaucracy. And again, you know, we're treating the poor people as if they can't work with money. I think the Bangladesh model and the one of Yunus Muhammad, with more than 8 million members around the world, should have also be considered as a model for banking for South Africa. Because, and when he was here at the Nelson Mandela lecture day, he actually put a challenge to South Africa, and he said, you know, can you, you know, in 20 years' time, really empower the poor? So I am not convinced that besides this is going to be a government bank owned by government that is going to be different from the commercial bank. And I would really like to know why have you not considered, or maybe I'm asking the wrong people, maybe I should ask why did Polokwane not consider the Bangladeshi model, or, you know, that it's a tried and tested method.
I'm going to answer the last question, and I think the MD can deal with the operational one of where post offices are. But, you know, as a post bank and post office in South Africa, I think the main thing that has made us where we are today is the regulatory restrictions. That is a major thing, and I think it's being taken care of. But I think that has produced the kind of institution that we have, which is actually a reflection of our country, our financial systems in the country, which are not, I won't call them schizophrenic, but you are neither here nor there. But as a board of the past couple of years or so, we really have been viewing our mandate of access to affordable finance to the majority of the people where we are as a post office very seriously. One of the projects which I think we have, although we are still very, we've just started with InPostBank, is to make the people within our savers, our depositors, let's take the stock firm, to make them visible. To say, who is this person? Who are these people who are saving? What has happened with the formal banks is that you have the two people who are the secretary and the chairperson of a stock firm, they put the money. They're the only ones who are known. But within post office in the past year, we started to try and have a profile of the people within these funds that keep coming. And for that is to say, how do we then create the products that are relevant to the people within this? So we're not, I really think we have appreciated we have appreciated the unique place that we have as post office. And with the regulatory framework that's being unfolded now, we see ourselves being positioned to do that. But I really believe we are not at all like the other banks. We wish we had their money, but we are not at all. We are very focused on the people that we are mandated to deal with.
Thanks. That's just before the MD concludes for us. I think, Honourable Member Delisle, you are actually saying what we are about. Maybe we did not explain this clearly for you, because what we're talking about that we are not lending now is that the license that we currently have does not allow us to lend. However, whilst our board member, Msimang, is highlighting that we are restricted by regulation, we took it further. We did not wait. We actually experimented on the Grameen Bank model. But what we understood, because we could not do it as a post office because we don't have the license, but the process of experimentation has assisted us because we worked with a Bangladesh model, Grameen Bank, the Small Enterprise Foundation in South Africa. They are our clients. They are our partners. We experimented in Limpopo just this weekend. One of our board member and also executives were there, where basically we're getting feedback from the members in terms of how that is operating. Because what is good about the post office is that you don't necessarily, as a post office, have to deal with every individual in a government bank model. We deal with the groups. So the groups set up the Bangladeshi model in terms of the Grameen Bank. And what we do for ourselves, for the groups, we enable the group because they save with us as a group, and the lending, then we manage their lending. What we're doing, we're empowering communities. And what this does is that we have enabled the Bangladeshi model through our experiment with SEF, Small Enterprise Foundation, but also we are looking at possibilities, and which Dutu will talk about the MD, in terms of the Cooperative Act, because it does not limit us to one group. We can deal with the different tiers of society through the post office. We don't necessarily focus on a particular group. So that accommodates the space because the products that we have can be enable different groups. So in a sense, yes, I want to say we are already in the space of working within the we actually, when Muhammad Yunus was here, we participated in the pre-workshops as a post office where we're basically looking at the model, but our focus is mainly with those who are in it in terms of how do we partner in making it a stronger thing, a stronger program. So from that perspective, but I just lastly to say, we are not like commercial banks. Commercial banks, for the Mzansi account, when you save, or maybe a relative or a domestic worker saves, they save into the Mzansi account, into the retail side of bank. There is a firewall between that and the lending side. When she goes to borrow, her history of how much she saved as a stock fell as an individual for all these years is not even considered. She has no face. That's what Ms. Msimang was referring to. What we are doing as a post office is to ensure that that book, which is a manual book that you see and sign, will assist you as collateral because you have been now recognized as a value-adding member of society in the financial markets of South Africa, which the other banks have excluded. 70% of the South African population is excluded from the formal financial markets, and the post office goes into that space to make sure that ordinary people are part of that space.
Which what we need to do from our side, is that to welcome the initiative, this new beginning by the post office. I'm sure Chair will be able to engage much when the process continues to unfold. But I think at the core of everything, I think in South Africa we all understand that, you know, sometimes we talk about people who are poor. But the real problem, other than people at disadvantage, is the issue of availability of facilities. I think that is key. You see, whether you take the same model of the current banking, banking operator which you are having, the fact of the matter is that they are not available where they're supposed to be. That's availability on its own, whether it's the current model or not, but that's a problem of availability. It's another debate in terms of the product. But I think our people in the country are just disadvantaged. Whether you do have money, but where do you put that money? Now, I would think that because of the main outlets of post office, that availability may be the reality in terms of accessing the other banking services, which currently people are not accessing in terms of this other bank. But you see, Chair, I was very interested by the matter raised by Honorable Member Dillon and my colleagues in terms of you go through the process. Because my starting point is the availability. You go through the process. A few years down the line, you see a shift focusing to the areas which are densely, populated, because it makes business sense to do that. You see, but I'm saying moving from availability, that currently yes, post office is available, but after that process, whether we don't shift towards the densely populated, because indeed it makes business sense to focus in those areas. But I'm saying maybe it's one issue which, as we go on with the process, ourselves, yes, because I'm saying it will be a welcoming initiative, one of its own, from my side, based on the availability. So whether the legislation will be able to prevent what makes business sense later to continue disadvantage the same people which want to initiate this initiative for. I think that will be one issue. And the issue, Chair, which I don't need maybe a response now. There's been a lot of studies about the charges by the banks, the major four banks, that South African banks are charging too high in terms of their services. Now, I would hope that a part of what we'll be doing, whether that will be able to cure that sickness of the high charges in terms of the banks and so on. But I don't need an answer now. I hope as things unfold, we get the further presentation. Those are the issues which maybe, for me, where I stand from Polokwane, the 52nd National Conference of the African National Congress. We move from a perspective that we need to address the issue of the poor. They talk about Polokwane. Let's start it from Polokwane. From where we're standing in Polokwane, we said it can be that it will be another good 10 years or another 5 years for the rich to have it nice, whereas the poor are getting poorer and so on. So I'm saying I'm just raising this question so that whatever final product you are looking at, I'll give you an example. Look at the Infraco. When we were dealing with Infraco, the issue was Infraco is going to use the Transnet, the Sportnet infrastructure, which is throughout the country in terms of optic fiber and so on. But since then until now, maybe it's part of the weakness of the institution, like all other of our weaknesses, there is leakage which has happened for those people in rural areas in terms of accessing telecommunications. Now the focus is under sea cable and other things. Those people, they don't even dream about making a call of international and so on. Now there is a shift from the original reason
why we said we push for InfraCo. So that's why I'm just raising this thing, that because later things become whether it makes business sense or not. If it does not make business sense, then the focus shifts to someone else and so on. But I'm just raising those things, not necessarily for a response, but I think that's what we need to cut from our side as the processes unfold, so that we make sure that our people are not taken for a ride for those densely populated areas. You see, when Honorable Member Mastori was saying Chabavu, so where is going to say Chiba, Mastori's got options. There are people who don't even an option where to go to which post office. You see, I'm just not downplaying the question by Mastori, but I'm just saying those options. There are people who don't have an option. Their option is the underbed, the mattress. That's where they'll put their money, because that's where they can access it and sending hundreds of friends to go to a post office somewhere and so on. Thanks.
I think to respond to the question that Mamstori asked, I'm not close enough to which post offices are where in terms of particularly the postal infrastructure. Unfortunately, our executive responsible for retail is not here. He would be best informed in terms of how do we allocate which post office belongs to who, which one is the one that you're allocated to in terms of demarcation. I'm not close enough to the issues. But in terms of the issue of corporate social investment, Mamstori, currently we work overall, as I indicated initially when we started, that we're a division of the post office. So it would be whatever investments that the post office make in communities would be what we become part of. We don't have ones that are separate, that are only belong to Postbank until such time that we have a separate infrastructure. And there are a number of focus areas that we're looking at as the post office. I think the chairperson will also assist me here in this regard. We also are looking strongly on the issue of enterprise development as the post office overall, because what we found is that even in terms of some of the products that we use that are only postal products, you may find that there aren't sufficient people that can provide them. For example, we have what we call red trays. Red trays are the ones that carry the mail. Nobody else uses red trays other than us. But we find that we end up using one institution because there aren't sufficient SMMEs that can actually produce that. So we started a program together with a supply chain whereby we can ensure that we actually train people that can down the line be the ones that provide some of these facilities that are only to the post office and may not necessarily be required by anybody else in terms of SMME development. So there's a wide range of things that we're doing, which I think when we come back next time with the CEO, she can expand more in terms of what are the broad focus areas for the post office. But for Postbank separately, we don't have our own programs. The programs that we have are programs that we're currently running together with other international institutions. We're part of what is called the World Savings Bank Institute, and together with WSBI, we're going to be running a program that is called W Savings, that is funded by the Bill Gates Foundation, whereby we're going to be focusing on the groups to make sure that the groups are the people that we focus on, that it's not just the individuals that are the executives in the groups, that we do training for the whole group. If it's a group of stocks, we do training for the whole group of Village Bank members, if it's Village Bank members that we're going to be focusing on. And they are actually coming through to the country this weekend for us to begin to put our blocks in terms of how we're going to run that program. We also are going to be running a program together with an institution that's called FES, which is another NGO that is focusing on financial literacy. So that's another program that we're going to be running, focusing on particular targeted communities where we're going to see to ensure that financial literacy is not only for those people that necessarily bank with you, but for communities. So there's a wide range of programs that we run, but I think the CEO next time will deal broadly with what the post office does overall.
Right. Thank you very much for the initial briefing. Maybe I should suggest that the researcher should prepare a paper for us. I must say I know very little about banking, and I'm a bit intimidated that it's going to process a bill dealing with very complicated matters and people's monies, and I feel almost inadequate in this matter. So perhaps the research team should look at maybe some academic papers on banking and perhaps a background document for us to prepare us for this, I think, the daunting task as far as I can see. Can I take it that this bill is likely to be with us in the next quarter? Is that a reasonable assessment, or are we looking at next year, some indication?
To indicate the timing at this point.
Okay, so the department.
I think the department will very soon indicate.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much then. I think we can conclude this one. Our next item is the ICASA nomination, and try and finalize that. I just had to stipulate it to all the members. All right, members, thank you. We wanted just to go through the ICASA interviews. We've concluded the interviews last week. We've got it in writing that Mr. Nkumatela is withdrawing. I think the letter has been circulated because I insisted on a letter, and he's been kind enough to indicate that he's withdrawing. We've got to suggest two names to the National Assembly, and from there to go to the Minister. So can I invite the parties to put forward some names? Right, any suggestions? Langa?
Chair, thanks very much. I think from the ANC side, we are in the position to propose two names for consideration. The first name is Mr. Edmund Mihlonti Baloyi. The second name is Mr. Khulile Simbati Bokwana. Those are proposals from the ANC. Because we look at their CVs and in terms of the interviews, we thought they are capable people. Mr. Khulile Simbati Bokwana.
Can I just check, is that in order of priority, or is this the two names that you put forward?
The other way around.
Yeah, oh, right.
Let me put in the order of priority. It's Mr. Khulile Simbati Bokwana, then the second person is Mr. Edmund Mohloti Baloyi.
Chairperson, in the order of preference, the DA's first choice is Mr. William Francis Stuckey, and then, secondly, Josephine Kwena Mabotya.
Chairperson, I've got three names. The one is Mr. David Finucci, and then the second one is Mr. Kulule Simpathy Botswana, and then then Mr. William Francis Tuck. My only problem with him is that he seems to have lots of problems with the cancer. and you don't know whether you want to come in there and sort out the problems from within. But I think his experience and his understanding of the industry, and then of course also the ownership or the shares in some of the companies, I think that just needs to be cleared up. But I wanted to propose those three names.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to nominate Ms. Nkaku. I can't understand that the ANC is so gender insensitive. And then secondly, I would like to also propose Mr. Stuckey. Nkaku.
We have a food salad again. Yeah, we have a food salad. We're going through the whole process now, trying to streamline things. I don't know how we're going to take this forward. Because we've now got almost all the interviewees as recommendations. Almost all of them. We don't have too many meeting points. Do we want to start engaging now, or? The last one, Kulile Bokwana and Edmund Beloyi. The first one, I mean the first name, the third name is Kulile Bokwana, and Edmund Beloyi is the second name. Yes, the advisor to the
chairperson.
How do we want to take this forward? Because it's a too many meeting points, yes, really.
Horse trading. I just wanted to know if the ANC, if they're saying their first choice would be Mr. Bokwana, if they would reconsider their second nomination. Because we obviously have to submit the two names, we all know that. In terms of the act, I wanted to know if they are very firm in their recommendation for the second one. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I don't think that question need to be posed to the ANC. I think all parties submitted more than one name. Yeah. But we said in terms of our preference, it's Bokwana and Mr. Baloyi. We know that we're supposed to submit two names, but that is the order of preference.
You can reformulate
my question. Chairperson, we all know that the ANC has the majority in the committee, and therefore they have the strongest voice. So my question to the ANC is, could that perhaps indicate to us, if they had a third person that they would have identified, if we could perhaps look at another person that we could find a common agreement on, and that we then see if we can't reach a position that we all feel comfortable with the quality of the candidates. If not, then obviously we accept.
No, I think it's got Bokwana. In any way, we've got to submit two names. You see, if I may just start, I mean, I'm trying to get a discussion. Sorry. Oh, okay.
Maybe the ID or COP and ID, I know it's it's an alliance, COPE and ID, if they want to suggest a person, they must suggest that person. Then we must engage from that end. Rather than saying the ANC must ask them, then they will withdraw the name, then they will they suggest a person. They must suggest a person because we are open for engagement, we are open for a discussion. It's not that the ANC will abuse our power and this majority that we have. We are very cautious about it and we are very humble about it.
Lindiwe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask if we were going to follow the same procedure we did with the host family style of the SABC, or whether the credentials of all the interviewees are up for discussion. I think we should motivate for why we've chosen who we've chosen, and then horse trade afterwards. To do so just on the basis of their names and who chose more than whom, someone might be able to move their position based on somebody's argument.
Now, I think Lindiwe is right. We're not in the horse trading business here. This is a very different exercise. Here we're looking for persons who are the most competent or perhaps less skilled to make a contribution. ICASA is, I think, it's not the best performing state-owned entity or regulatory authority. And there are huge problems there. We are all aware of it. And we have a responsibility of identifying the two best persons that can go there and add value. So I think it's really with that that we're coming into this thing. It's not about, you know, trying to score political points, et cetera. For example, if I may just kickstart the process, if you take Mr. David Manucci, it's really an exceptionally brilliant young man, okay? But he's the kind of person who's really an innovator. He's better suited in a person who's developing things and creating and innovation and new research. His personality is not a regulator. He hasn't got that experience, authority. The expertise is there. The technical knowledge is there. The academic knowledge is there. I don't doubt that. But in terms of whether he can really stand his ground as a regulator, authority, I think maybe he's still a student. Coming out of that, and he's got to gain some experience. So I think let's have that kind of a discussion. Originally, I thought he was a very good person, but when you really look at what is needed in ICASA, is he ready-made for the job? I don't think he's ready-made for the job. So
can I respond to that, yeah. One, since I have put him forward? It's exactly the reason why I have suggested his name. It's because there is a lack of technical skills in ICASA. ICASA relies too much on technical skills from outside, from the operators and from the industry that they are supposed to regulate. They always rely on them to provide that technical skill. They don't have the technical skills from within ICASA. And I thought with his qualifications, he's an engineer, PhD in engineering, and you know, that he could just add value by bringing that skill to ICASA. One of them said, you know, why should you have counselors, or what are they called, counselors? Once they are appointed as counselors, they then appoint advisors to help them. Because they don't have the technical know-how of what is required from them in terms of the act. So for that reason that I have suggested him to bring that kind of skill to ICASA. But I'm not hard and fast on it because, you know, if you look at the other candidates, for instance, you know, there were some people who are good on policy who certainly will qualify for a regulator. But you can only be a regulator once you understand the industry that you're supposed to regulate. And the problem with ICASA is that you've got councillors who don't understand the industry that they're supposed to regulate.
Lindiwe, Nikki, Julie.
I agree with Patricia on the question of technical skills, but I would argue that William Stuck has the technical skills and, I can't think of a better word, but the personality, the drive, the decisiveness to actually carry forward his technical ability into action. He had a lot of concrete ideas he had a very good understanding of where the problems in ICASA lay. And I take Patricia's point about him seeming to have a problem with ICASA, but that seems to be a driver or a motivator, which seemed, you know, like something that would drive him to actually get onto that horse, ride it, work, and fix those bottlenecks that we discussed with him in the interview. He had a very full understanding of where the problems lay. And if we talk about ICASA not functioning as one of our entities that we monitor, as well as the others or as well as it should, then I think what we do need is a problem solver with technical skills. And so I think Patricia's motivation for the technical side is very important, but I think that William Stuck could actually fill that adequately.
Yeah, just to fall in on what my colleague Galindiwe said just now. Now, when I listened to all the candidates the other day, I'm very honest that the moment when William Stuckey started to talk, you can see he has a full understanding of this whole regulatory thing. So he made a very good impression on me. So none of the candidates I knew beforehand. I just sort of read their CVs and then listen to what they say. And then the other candidate I mentioned second, Josephine Kwena Mapotia. I also gave her a very, very good point because she convinced me that she understands what is going on in the whole broadcasting world. And you're absolutely correct, as you say. If you read a lot of stuff around ICASA, it's about incompetence, and I think they sort of give the whole industry a very bad name. And people are struggling because of ICASA not doing the jobs well. So that is my motivation, sir. I don't think this whole issue must have anything to do with political preference or whatever. It's the question of who is best equipped for the job, and my observation was that Mr. William Stuckey has got the personality. Mr. Vannucci did also very well, but he's still he's a young man, and there's a lack of experience on the east side. And I think Mr. Stuckey is a bit wiser at this stage, and that's my motivation. Thank you, Chairperson.
I've been covered, thank you, Chairperson, in support of the motivation for Mr. Stuckey, because we're really convinced that we need in ICASA now some technical skills, and we need a person who's a problem solver, who can really break through the complicated sort of almost structures that have been established within this environment. A person who knows exactly, also is a little cynical about the world out there, which ICASA is supposed to regulate. And Chairperson, really, you know, as they indicated, it's such a fast transforming environment in which that you need the technical experts so that they cannot sway the board to take the wrong decision for reasons that would benefit some sectors within that industry. I think it's so critical that you have that practical
approach. Thank you, Chairman. We're listening to and we're digesting what they are saying and so on. But look, Chair, I think after all has been said, Chair, I don't think there is anyone who can doubt who are sitting in that interview that Khulile, in terms of the understanding of the Act and understanding of processes,
and the alternative into ICASA. Can anyone dispute that, who was sitting in that interview? As much as he was under pressure, the telecom planting into ICASA and so on and so on. But I'm just saying, Chair, every response which he was giving in terms of what the Act is saying and what might be the weaknesses of the Act, which what needs to be done in terms of curing that particular weakness. I think, Chair, if people were there in that interview, I'm sure they pick up that up. And out of all these candidates which were there, there was no one candidate who was so clued up in terms of what the legislation is saying and what are the short weaknesses of the legislation, the current legislation, and so on. It dealt with Section 10 in terms of what ICASA is supposed to happen very well and what exactly maybe might need to happen and so on. And also it went also to deal with the issue of Section 3 of the Act in terms of the power reductions of what ICASA must do and so on, responding on the Act. I would think, Chair, that that's what we ourselves as an ANC were so impressed with, the insight of the legislation, what it provides and also what needs to be done. And also looking to the fact that it has been serving to various regulators, your APSA and so on. So we have that delivery combination of experience in terms of the issue of regulating. And also that one time he went to APSA and then later go out and so on. So that's why we felt that Kulile will be our first preference based on those matters and other issues. The second issue, Chair, with Edmond. After the interview, all of us, we understood what is happening to ICASA. See, after interviewing, I don't think there's a single member in this committee that doesn't understand what is happening.
You see Paul Vachiato there. Today it's in the IT web in his article. He had this thing about horses and ducks and all that the other day. And people were saying, did you really say the chairman? And I said, yeah, I said it in jest, man. Yeah, he writes about this thing. And you get nasty calls from the ICASA saying, why you call us a dead duck? now you're starting another thing. Hey, I don't want that person to be burnt tonight, you know, put a tire around him or something.
I'm saying, Chair, that was the basis in terms of cooling. And also issue of Mr. Baloyi. You see, Chair, after interviewing him, we understood what is happening to ICASA. I'm sure he also tried to explain what was his shortcomings in terms of trying to assist in that situation and so on. Now, Chair, you see, that's why I welcome the decision which you are saying, let us go into each of the candidates. But you see, Chair, we shortlisted these people because we thought they all can make it to be cancelled. But we have to interview them to get more insight in terms of them and so on. So we will motivate, Chair, but it's all going to go back to what Cook proposed initially. Because I don't think, Chair, no one is not going to motivate any of the candidates which they are coming to come up with. But you see, Chair, to motivate and convince a person, it depends whether the person would like to listen or not. Because even him or herself is convinced that what is motivating is the correct candidate. And the other one also is convinced that what is motivating is the candidate, which is okay and so on. So lastly, Chair, it will go towards what we, the process which we started to do initially, and then we stop it and come to the motivation and so on. But I'm saying, Chair, without any preferences, Chair, and say we're just based on the interview, people have just come up and also try to understand the legislation. Because one of the problems, Chair, which they've raised, you see, Chair, it's one thing to have the zeal to go and do. And I think that's what most of the councillors have been doing, but forgetting that their procedures to be followed. And all of us agreed last time that ICASA has been messing up or losing cases only when it comes to procedural matters. So indeed, we need a person to understand the provision of the legislation. And some witnesses currently in ICASA in terms of following processes. Well, that's where the problem is. They have not yet been tested in terms of their ability, most of the time, to understand the industry. They've been coordinating in terms of procedures, failing to follow procedures to reach their determination or their decision. Now, Chair, based on that, Chair, you'll need a person to understand the provision of the legislation. That's why when it comes to Kulil, I've been repeatedly saying, he was sharp in terms of saying this is what the legislation requires. And this is the deficient of the legislation and so on, but this is what you can do. To a certain extent, if you have listened to Mr. Baloyi, of course, him being have the advantage of being within the ICASA, understanding what the shortcomings of ICASA and maybe some advices which have gave ICASA, maybe they could not take up and so on for one reason and another. That's why Chair was saying in order to cure that, it's also important to have that person. Understand the legislation and also the processes. Because I will argue, Chair, that 10 out of, we'll find that only 1 out of 10 cases which have tested ICASA in terms of whether their decision are correct or not, but most of the time is the issue of proceeds, that they don't understand proceeds. They are so eager to tackle the industry for getting proceeds. So we can't fall to that trap. I think we've got too many of them currently who are so eager to tackle the industry, forgetting that in order to tackle the industry, you must follow procedures so that you get your ultimate end around that particular way. So that will be our motivation.
Chairperson, can I make a proposal as a way forward that we, in terms of the process, we must submit two names, am I correct? Can I propose that we submit the names of Kulile and William Stuck. Stucky. Something like Stucky.
Jefferson, I would like to second the proposal.
Just before we get into formalities, you see, I think one of our concerns as the NC was also being that apart from the conflict of interest, I think he has declared he was quite upfront about it. But here's a person who's been nominated by a particular organization. And when you're in there, or sector, ISPA, how do you divorce yourself from old NATO? And the question of independence came out quite strongly in our discussions about it. Technically, he's competent. I don't have a problem with that at all. I think he's very competent, very able. But we have to look at the question of independence more carefully, particularly because he was nominated by an organization and that reflected something. You see, even if you take Mabotia, good candidate, but you can't have Bokwane and Mabotia both coming from Telco. It creates its own difficulties for us. So I think we need to be mindful of that, and let's have a conversation about it before we might have to adjourn for a short while to see what the party, you know, whether people can go back and get some renewed mandate, etc.
Before we adjourn, I'd also like to raise a concern. It's about Mr. Baloyi. He was the chairperson's advisor. Am I talking about the right person? Yeah. I would argue the same question about independence. He has an intimate relationship. He has intimate.
That's the one you must see.
He has.
We understand that you
mean with the existing council. He has an established relationship with the existing council, and particularly with the chairperson. And I would argue that he wouldn't necessarily have the capability to bring fresh new ideas to the table, being that he hails from the organization you referred to as a horse dead duck or whatever it was. And I really think, and I think we can probably all agree that ICASA needs new blood. And my concern is that, there's the question of his potentially not necessarily being strong enough to challenge his former chairperson, but also the extent to which he was the advisor of the former chair. He did explain of the chairperson, sorry. He did explain the areas in which he disagreed and maybe his advice was not taken. But there are areas in which his advice did have a bearing on what happened in ICASA, and that to me constitutes a record that he already has at the regulator, and I think that would be a thing that disadvantages him in this process. So that's my reservation, I think, about Mr. Maloyi.
Chair, I think we'll need a 5-minute break, but at the same time, Chair, as the ANC, we are not comfortable with William Stas in terms of the network, because we even asked that question, even though his response was not convincing. But they said, no, I will. I think that time he was the chairperson of the IPS or things like that, treasurer. So, and he said, no, I will vacate my position and things like that. But the real issue, if he vacate position, but how are we sure that he will cut his connection? And because most of his response, he was raising his frustration with the ICASA as the organization, or as this a collective of organization, because they were frustrated by the ICASA. So that was not part of the deployment from this organization to know, let us deploy you there and maybe go there and change this in our advantage and things like that. That's what gave us a problem at the ANC. But in terms of understanding the legislature, we're comfortable with that. But what is the motive behind of identifying him as that was our problem. But unless if we're saying no, but to us, we had a problem because we did discuss a number of people and said, no, this person, because some of them, it's not that they were deployed by the ANC. Some of them, we met them there. But when they responded to questions and when they showed their understanding of the legislation, it's where we said, no, this person maybe is the right person and things like that. But we'll need that 5-minute break, Chair, and just to look at the suggestion here, and then maybe other people, they've raised certain concerns with certain names. Yeah.
Can I just raise the issue before we break? In terms of the problems that the ISPA had, it was mostly with Telkom, and those problems have been reported. There are 5 cases. They've been reported to the Competition Commission. Some of them the Competition Commission is still busy with. So it is an industry problem. What I'm trying to say is that the fact that they followed the route of going to the Competition Commission can't really be held against him as a person, IPSA, because Telkom was at fault. Telkom actually went to court, and then the court ruled against the Competition Commission, saying that the Competition Commission doesn't have jurisdiction over Telkom. So I think if we look at some of the information that he has raised, what I like what he said is that the legislation is protecting the operators more than the consumers. And he actually pointed out to us, where the weaknesses is in the legislation, where the operators get more protection than the consumers.
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to go back to the issue of independence. I think it's very difficult to define absolute independence. Because every person has got a certain background, maybe a vested interest wherever, and it's a very grey area. And I will agree what Honourable DeLille just said, that I think that we need a strong guy like William Stuckey on that board. He's got a thrust behind him, and his knowledge of the legislation is also very, very good, technical, and his knowledge of legislation.
So I think when he's on the board of, or councillor, we won't see all those procedural mistakes that they make and so on. But just to point out about independence of a person. I've got a certain background, sir. You've got a certain background. So I don't think one of us can really, really say we are absolute independent thinkers or whatever.
Can I just check? Are we agreeing on Kulile Bokwane at the moment as the first candidate? Is there agreement among us on this issue? But we are now going to adjourn and consider his second name, either Beloyi or William Stucky. Is that what we are trying to sort out now? All right.
Chair, yeah. From the opposition, are they firm with the Stucky or... or
Stucky?
Yeah, I think maybe the ANC's comment about independence. Anybody can say you're independent, but you're all subject to the law. And you will be subject to the ICASA regulations, the ICASA Act. So nobody can go in there and act as if you're independent. We're all subject to the law. So the argument of independence doesn't really hold for me.
No, I think that's an assumption.
It's fine. So, DA, are you dropping Mabotia?
Yes, we are.
You're dropping Mabotia. Okay, so we're agreeing on Kulile Bokwane as the first candidate, and we are now trying to sort out the second candidate, right? Can we adjourn? I'm just thinking it's 12:15. Can this be done by lunchtime, or do we want to come back after the House? What time is the House rising today? 3:15. Do we want to come back then for 15, 20 minutes and try and wrap it up so it just gives time for people? Huh? Yeah. All right, so we will reconvene immediately after the House rises. Immediately after we finish the national work in the National Assembly, we come here. Is it going to be fine here? All right, we'll get an SMS. As the venue, but provisionally it's here. Narutana just needs to check on the availability. So at 3:15, we come here. Right? Thank you very much. Mr. Kolwane has gone out. But from... Are you saying it's a problem? You've got a meeting. But other people are available.
Okay.
Suzanne? All of you have got a meeting.
Chairperson, do we have a new meeting?
Maybe we can come here just to take that decision and move to another meeting. I don't think it will take time. No, we need.
No, I think we need to go and consult.
We
need to go and consult. Oh, I see what you are saying. What is on the agenda in the House? Anybody debating or speaking?
No. Precious little chairperson.
So, all right.
It's just member statements, and then there are reports, but
can
no
we say,
discussion.
Can we say 3 o'clock? We come here at 3. Well, that'll be fine. Right. Before you leave, Mr. Kolwane is not here, but I know that he would agree with us. For next week, for the SABC, we go to a scheduled meeting next week, Tuesday, to try and do the shortlisting. We don't want what we've been through now, where we get, you know, because there's a big batch of names there. Can we constitute a small staff team and maybe meet either tomorrow or Thursday for a short while so that we can just get the names in the basket, start sorting out a few things, and try and streamline it so that when we come next week, we'll be better able to manage the process. We might even have to consider how many names we want to shortlist. Previously, the committee decided on 36. Do we want to stick to that, or do we want to turn that down and really make a more careful selection? Mm-hmm. So these interviews take very long. I can promise you the SABC interviews are not like the ICASA interviews. They go on for over an hour each. So if you say 40 people, you're looking at 40, 50 hours of interviews. And if you reduce that and you're more careful about the selection, it makes it a more manageable process. So I think from the ANC side, we want to recommend that we set up a small task team, not to make decisions, but to help process, so that we are better placed next week and we can move more smoothly next week, Tuesday. If there's an in-principle agreement about that, then maybe this afternoon when we get together, we can just decide who will the task team be, and then the logistics, when do we meet, either tomorrow or on Thursday.
Chairperson, if we shortlist, I don't think we must exceed 20 people. There must be 12 on the board. So I will want to make a suggestion that
no,
we...
Let's not get into the discussion. Let's get the task team to bounce off these ideas, and then so that we can start agreeing on some of these things ahead of time. It will help us next week, really. Otherwise, we're going to spend a long time next week. Right. So if when we come back, just tell us who the task team will be from the opposition side, and then we can decide in the meeting either tomorrow or Thursday. Thank you very much. We meet here at 3 o'clock, unless... We meet here at 3 o'clock unless Nalutando sends out a new SMS. Yeah. No, Reverend Zondi. Yeah, can you track him down, please?
Thank you.